Welcome to Garbage of the Five Rings, a podcast dedicated entirely to hoping it will get better from here. I'm one of your hosts, Jude Vase, and today my co-host Amelia Antrim and I are pausing our sprint through the AEG timeline to look at what's going on in the new timeline.
Palette cleanser episode!
Yay! do we have any corrections or non-apologies today?
No, we have no corrections and no apologies, as usual. We are perfect. We do have a comment, though. Or a compliment, maybe?
A compliment. Yes, certainly a compliment or even a cheer or a I don't even know.
We don't have to be C words. Non-apologies doesn't start with C.
A very great lump of gratitude. I don't know how you want to put it.
Is that how you measure gratitude? In lumps?
Sure.
That's the unit of measure?
Yes. Dump truck then. We put out the request several months ago now, for Imperial Heralds, and we got some responses back from fans for which we were very grateful. And then one of our followers pointed us to a Facebook group, the L5R CCG Completionist Facebook group. And it was there that we got put in touch with a collector named Douglas McElmore, who provided us with a complete collection of Imperial Heralds from start to finish in perfect condition. And Douglas was kind enough to send me the entire collection, and I have been scanning them, four or five a night. I'm pretty close to getting done here. I think I'm down to like 20 to go, something like
that.
Very
nice.
Yeah, they take a while, and I'm almost to the newsprint ones, which are going to suck. But anyway, the point is, we got all of the fucking Imperial Heralds, which is super goddamn cool, both as a research item. Having these as something that we can use in our research is going to be super valuable, but also as an archival thing, to have all of these Heralds on the internet where anyone can get them and read them and look at them. Let me tell you, as I have been scanning them, if you follow me on Twitter, you have been seeing me go through some fucking nostalgia trips as I scan these fucking things. These are real weird time capsules of L5R's history, and it's fantastic to see these. So I am really, really thrilled that we were able to track down a full collection of these guys, and I'm really excited that we are able to provide them to you, our fans. So,
if people wanted to find them, Jude, where on the internet are they?
They are on our website. If you go to garbageofthefiverings.com, you can click on the Heralds link, and you will find them all right there, free to download.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited because I know that we've said for several episodes now that like that is the one big piece that we were missing aside from the AEG forums. Mm-hmm. That was like the big piece of source material that we were really lacking. And so having all of those and honestly, like being able to share them with everybody is pretty cool too. Because I'm sure that we are not the only ones that were like, man, I wish. It's super cool. It's super cool. And I've been really excited about the info that we've gotten from people for this show. And like the number of people that have helped us find things has been super cool. As we kind of accidentally become archivists of this stupid game.
That it's been weird to kind of find this role as like nobody else is kind of doing this. So we sort of turned into it. And that's weird. And that's a thing.
Not what we meant to happen, but hey, here we are.
Yeah, but I'm legitimately really pleased that we could get these Heralds online for the community because I think they're super, super cool. As like I said, as time capsules of L5R's history, they're fantastic. Just going back and looking at what the community looked like. One of my favorite things to do with them is to look at the player ranking section. The Heralds come out like once a quarter. So each issue, the rankings get longer and the font gets smaller until finally they just stopped printing them because there were too many names on the list. But it was really fun to see. And you see familiar names. You see artists and players that I recognize from my day. And it's very cool. It's very fun. I definitely recommend that you go check them out. And I'll be posting in all of the various places, Twitter and Facebook, that we post on when I get the full collection up.
Yeah, it's super cool. But we are not here today to talk about old L5R things, as fun as our time capsules are, we are here to talk about what's going on now.
Yeah.
This is not a thing that we're going to do super often. We're really focused on the AEG lore and kind of the story of the game. But we did want to take a minute to kind of talk about where stuff is at now, because it's fun. We want to, and it's our show, goddammit.
Yeah. I think specifically one thing I'm really interested in is looking at, now that I've got a real frighteningly solid grasp on Clan Wars, looking at how the new lore, the new setting, which is set just before the Clan Wars kickoff, looking at what they've changed, because it's fascinating to me the things that they've changed, just what they've chosen to change and the few tweaks that they've made. I think it's really interesting what they've done. And especially given the interest that we've taken in the ways in which the old L5R was no ways that great, the ways in which they've changed, they've updated L5R is really interesting to me. So I think those are worth taking a look at as we transition out of the Clan Wars and into the next set.
Definitely. I think I want to give a little bit of quick background. So it's pretty likely that people know already, but if you're just here for our witty banter, quick background info. The old timeline ran for 20 years. In 2015, Fantasy Flight bought the game. There was tons of grumbling and speculation and outrage, and that one time that the owner of my local game store insisted that I knew nothing about the sale, and I was clearly just there getting something for my boyfriend. Hey, local game store guy, look at me now, asshole.
Nice.
Yep. Yep, I just want that guy to know that when he said Fantasy Flight didn't buy the RPG, and I argued with him, he was wrong, and I was right. So, fuck you.
Yeah. I have complicated thoughts about the sale, but this is not really the time or place for them. Maybe someday we'll talk about them in more depth, but anyway.
Yeah, I mean, you ranted about it previously in episode 4, I think. There was a lot of speculation at the time of the sale that they were going to reboot the storyline. It was mostly correct. They actually pushed everything back before the Clan Wars, and before the coup even. So they're starting their timeline around 1123. So
yep,
for those keeping track on their timelines at home.
Yep. So what we're going to take a look at is the new lore that's out there. There's already a couple of years worth of it. So we can't discuss all of it because we haven't been reading it as deeply as the old lore. But we want to look at the major differences, why they matter, and then we're going to indulge in some shipping because fuck you guys. It's our podcast and we're going to talk about it if we want to.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and really like...
You'll see why.
Yeah.
And just buckle up because it's a preview of what's to come, motherfuckers. So
I'm so excited. Okay. We have to do all the other stuff first.
I know, right?
Okay, so let's check in with our faves. The new timeline starts before the stuff that we've covered already on the show. There are still lots of familiar names and a few unfamiliar names.
One of the big overriding changes that we see throughout this is they're fronting the Clan Wars characters, even though we're a number of years before the Clan Wars, which is to say characters who will be more central, who would have been more central to this time period in the old story, Satsume being the prime example, are being pushed off screen, and people who weren't central to the story at this point in the old story, Tsuko, Hotaru, Hitomi, are being pulled forward, which is to say basically that even though we're setting the timeline, we're set in 1123, the cast of characters is more or less the same cast of characters from like 1127. Let's talk about the clans real quick. Everybody's least favorite clan with Pinchers, the crab, are sitting on their wall watching the Shadowlands mass, worrying about their troop numbers and their dwindling store of jade. I'm going to come out and say it. I don't hate the crab in the new storyline. I think they're a little boring, but otherwise I don't hate them.
What?
I don't know if this makes me... I'm conflicted because I really love hating Hida Kasada. And the Hida Kasada in the new fiction is just kind of there.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't feel like he's super compelling, but he's just, like, not my type of character either. Like,
yeah.
So, but, I mean, maybe for other people he is. He's just not, he's not my jam.
Yeah. But he's definitely not in league with the Shadowlands, at least not yet. Maybe that's something that's coming. Kunioyori sure the fuck is. But, well, maybe he's not in league with them, but he's definitely tainted. But Kisada and Yakumo and Tsukune are fine. I don't know. They don't seem particularly compelling to me from the fictions I've read, but they're definitely not in league with the Shadowlands yet, which is how they started in the old fictions.
So. Yeah. So we kind of see him hanging out at the wall, worrying about stuff with his sons. And hey, remember his daughter? No, you don't, because they don't mention her like at all until maybe one of the last fictions of the Clan Wars.
Yeah, in a clan where they're letter, like,
she's not good enough to lead. Because remember that whole thing where Kachiko was like, he doesn't have any heirs left. And it's like, he definitely still has a daughter. So she came out of nowhere. But she's here now. So, and there's actually a description of him being a tactical genius this time, which I thought was nice, if they were going to have him be that. So I liked that they actually showed that happening.
Nice.
Let's talk about the crane.
Yeah.
Crane are having a bad time.
Yeah, this was a really interesting change. I liked.
Yeah, I really, I loved this. So they recently suffered a horrible tsunami. It wiped out most of their fertile land, which was, this was supposedly about like 3 years ago, I think. And it's led to this potential famine and a lack of resources to feed their armies, who are engaged in war with the lion, as usual, over Toshirambo, as you know. And there's the recent unsolved death of Doji Satsume, the former Emerald Champion.
Yeah, which is interesting. In the Clan Wars timeline, Satsume dies during the coup. So it's interesting that they killed him quite a bit earlier. Narratively, I see what they're doing. They want to push Hotaru, which is the now gender-flipped version of Hotori, up to the front. And I think she's great. She's kind of a doofus, a little bit. She's emotionally naive, a little bit unprepared to be the leader of her clan. But she's also a stone-cold badass who drills the Lion Clan champion with a fucking bow in her first fiction. And is also pretty solid with big swords. So, and she's also still trained by the handsomest of gray cranes, Toshimoko.
Yep.
So
I love that his name was still right there at the beginning.
Yep. And she's also still a thing with Kachiko, which is both progressive and in this case, not creepy. The way that the sort of dueling horn dog or Hotori and Kachiko thing was in the old fiction.
So this is the thing that, like, I had to unpack a little bit because I was really excited about the Hotaru Kachiko thing. I was like, this is really great. And I like that they're, you know, that they're a thing. And then I had to kind of, like, mentally unpack it. Like, okay, am I okay with it just because it's two ladies now? Like, is that feel less gross just because it's that? I don't think it does because it feels much more like there's some actual like feelings there, that it's not sort of a manipulation on both their parts. It's not just like, you know, where Hotori was like, I can get the hottest girl, and Kachiko was like, I can make anyone sleep with me. It's much more mutual and vulnerable. I like too that the depiction is still that, like, Hotaru is not totally stupid. She's like, I don't really trust Kachiko, but I still like her anyway.
Yeah.
And Kachiko's still depicted as being, like, seductive, but it's not in that same, like, gross way.
Yeah, there's an element of vulnerability that the two have together that I like.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know.
Yeah,
sometimes,
no, I like it.
Sometimes ladies are good.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was cool.
Yeah, I like it a lot. I think the part of it that really works for me is that they're, like I said, there's a vulnerability there that certainly wasn't there in the old 5R version. And also, they're not a couple of fucking amoral hornbags that are trying to hate fuck each other. Like,
Yeah, it comes, like, the very first scene comes across is, like, they're genuinely, like, worried about each other. And, like, mm-hmm. like I said, there's this level of, like, care that they, like, care about each other as people and that, like, they really do love each other.
Yeah. And that would have worked regardless of what gender the people were, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
And the fact that they're both women is a good progressive change to make the game that I think is a good change, column A. And I think making those two characters more sympathetic and caring is a good change, column B. And you put those two changes together, A and B, and you get, in general, a more interesting, investable relationship.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, obviously, we're early in this episode still, but the this fiction where this first happens is, like, one of the first ones that was released. And so right away, you took a male character. You now have a woman. So, like, you have a woman as a main character, and you already have this same-sex relationship. And, like, this felt so incredibly refreshing and important to me. I feel bad being so, like, emotional about this game. But, like, as a woman who is not straight, like, this was huge to me. Like, this was, like, this was incredible. Like, I was so excited about it. And I know that there were so many people, like, I just, God, there were so many people that were, like, unhappy about this and that, like, this was...
Nah, fuck them.
But there were a lot of people that were not happy about this, that this was sort of just, like, fan service or I don't know, whatever. It felt really important to me, especially, like, now going back and reading, like, the stuff that I'd been putting up with. Like, man, this felt really good. And I just want to, like, I'm just going to be happy about it over here. We can continue with the rest of the episode. But, like, it was good. It was good and it was important.
Yep. Dragon Clan. What's up with the Dragon Clan?
I kind of, like, not lie to you that I just don't care about the Dragon Clan.
They're dying. Yeah. Do you care that they're dying?
I mean, but they're not, like, dying. They're just, like, not making more of them. You know? It's not like we're... Okay. All right. So anyway, the dragon have really low birth rates. And apparently this has been going on for a long time, but they're only kind of just now noticing this pattern. They are now adopting peasant children into the clan in an effort to just have more dragons. They're also having problems with a, quote, growing sect of dissidents and heretics. This is known as the Perfect Land sect. I believe that's different than the Kolot. Pretty sure.
Yeah.
Like 99% sure. They're running super low on food, and given the problems that the Krayn are having, that's not great because dragons can't really grow food in the mountains. Not known for their fields, really, up there. So they're having a bad time, and they're just kind of slowly dying out and are kind of like, oh, maybe we need to, like, interact with other clans and make some friends.
Yeah. Have they made it clear that Yokuni's a dragon in the new fiction? Or is that still, like, meta knowledge?
Like a dragon, like an actual dragon? Or yeah, a dragon, like
an actual, like, fucking dragon.
I don't know.
I don't know either. That was an idle curiosity.
Oh, yeah. I mean, not that I remember, but, like, I haven't, you know.
I know he's... I remember that he's still being mysterious and all riddly motherfucker, but I didn't know if they had been more forward with his whole, you know, dragony thing.
Yeah, so he's depicted as, like, he has these, like, basically, like, these episodes where he just, like, stares off into space and, like, I don't know, like, his body, like, becomes, like, rigid, and then all of a sudden he comes back and he's, like, says some fucking riddle, like he does, and then just goes back to meditating. Like, he just sits up in a mountain outside in winter, staring off. So he's just doing Togashi things, I guess, really is what I'm saying. Same old Togashi. Yeah. He wears his armor and talks in riddles. Same as it ever was.
Yeah. I don't remember any fictions with Hitomi, so you're going to have to talk about Hitomi.
She's really only, like, in the first dragon one, I think. She is following along with this magistrate that's going to talk to Yokuni about the problems that they're having with the Perfect Land Sect. And she's pretty much Hitomi. She's like really short-tempered. She's clearly competent at what she does, and like this magistrate that she's working with clearly trusts her opinion, but like recognizes that she's got a temper. We also know that she has a brother who is dead, and that really is about all we've gotten so far. But basically, she's the same. She does still have two human arms, to the best of my knowledge at this point, though.
Good to know.
Yeah.
Oh, the lion. Our first depiction of the lion in the game, as I recall, or in the new fictions, is of Tatori's brother, Arausu, boldly going forth and getting railed in the face with an arrow.
Yep.
I thought that was fantastic. Tatori is same as he ever was. I don't want to say I like the depiction of Tatori, because that would be contrary to everything I believe about this game. But I appreciate that they actually show him being a thinker, and they don't just tell you that he's a thinker. And they give you like some of his internal monologue. I like that they've replaced his blandness to a certain degree with indecisive wishy-washiness. That's fun. So that's cool. I guess he's shown as being basically punting on the clan leadership. Am I correct that they made Arausu his younger brother?
Yes. Yeah, they made Arausu his younger brother, and Tatori has been studying at this monastery, and basically it was understood that like he's too indecisive to be clan champion, that like he doesn't have what it takes. And so he really is like second choice here. And they do a decent job of kind of depicting that like he doesn't really want to be doing this, and he has no clue what he's doing. It seems like they're depicting the fact that he's smart, and he really does understand the tactics of things. They depict him at one point with this internal monologue where he's like playing out various scenarios and kind of just following the threads, and it's really interesting. But like ultimately he gets so like bogged down in those details that he can't make a decision. It becomes analysis paralysis, is what they always call it in therapy, where you just like you're looking at too many variables and you're just overwhelmed, and it seems like that's kind of where he's living right now. So it's an interesting depiction. I don't necessarily like identify with him any more as a character than I did before, but it's we get a better idea of like why he's boring.
We also meet Tsuko really early, and I think this is an interesting example of how the old story, of how the story team for Fantasy Flight took something shitty about the old story and rehabilitated it to a certain degree. Because we talked a lot about why we didn't like Tsuko. And I think the way that they took this trope of Tsuko being this crazy lady of the lion, and they contextualized her grief in a really good way, and how they link that to Tatori, so that her disgust with Tatori and her grief over Arausu make sense. She blames him for her husband to be being there in the first place. And for, it just makes sense that why so much of her rage is built the way it is.
I mean, the way it's happening in the story is that like Tsuko is in this group with Tatori while this battle is happening, and Arausu is out in like at the front line kind of, and Tatori tells him not to use whatever tactic he's going to use, and he's like, whatever, I'm going to do what I want anyway. But Tsuko's really angry because she's not there when he dies. She's back with Tatori, who is just like waiting for the perfect moment, and so she's really frustrated because I think she feels that, you know, if he had just made a decision, then things would be better. And so it's, you can see, like, there's just more reasoning behind
yeah,
why she is the way she is. I think like her depiction is still this like absolutely rage-filled, grieving woman, but like we understand why now.
Yeah, and it builds. It's not just that like Tatori sucks. It's it builds a reasonable framework for why she would blame him for that, and why her grief would be so, if not so so all-consuming, but at least I don't know. It just feels more whole. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I mean, we described it previously as being like, fuck you, you're not your brother.
Yeah.
And like, that was the whole reason for it. Like, that was the whole reasoning we got for why she doesn't like Tatori. And what we get here is like, no, there was so much more to it than that. And granted, it's, you know, it's not entirely Tatori's fault, but like, you can see why her anger is placed there.
Yeah.
It's directed, maybe, is the...
Yeah. Nerd bird.
The phoenix. The nerd birds. Oh, my sweet nerd birds. They've decided, unlike the dragon, that the perfect land sect is heretical, and they are completely outlawed in their lands. And they're real upset about the unicorn and their use of Meshoto. Because it's not how the phoenix do magic, and damn it if we aren't the authority on it.
Phoenix, man. Because nothing ever went wrong with the phoenix banning something and then experimenting with it themselves.
Do as I say, not as I do.
Yeah.
There's also apparently an ongoing elemental imbalance that the clan is trying to figure out and rectify. Each clan kind of has their own thing going on here, as you'll notice. They've got their problem that is specific to them, along with all of these other things that are kind of, you
famine,
know, like
jade shortages, elemental imbalances.
Yeah. And they're things that affect the other clans, but it's sort of like their wheelhouse to deal with, I guess. In this one, Tsukune becomes champion right away. Unexpectedly so. I really love the depiction of Tsukune in these fictions.
Yeah.
We get a lot closer of a look at her as a person than we do in the Clan Wars. In the Clan Wars, she's just like there and she's helpful. But in this one, like, she's really young. She's super nervous. She did not expect to be champion. She, like, did not want it, but the sword chose her, as it does. And she's just kind of adorable. Like, mm-hmm. She's incredibly anxious and, like, which, I mean, you would think is, like, not a good trait in a clan champion, but she's like, man, she's just doing her best. I read the novella and, like, oh, God, it's such a good depiction of her. Like, I love her. She's real good.
Tadaka's in there, too, with his dumb... does he have his dumb hat right at the beginning? I don't know.
I believe that he does.
I know that at one point he gets his dumb hat. He's wearing it at one point. I remember reading a fiction where he has his dumb hat.
You would latch on to that.
Tsukune was his yojimbo until she became champion and they can't hang anymore. Pretty sure she's in love with him still right from the beginning.
Yeah.
Because you got to keep those tropes going. So that's fine.
It's cute. Here's the spoiler part. So let's talk about our scorpions.
Yeesh.
I don't feel like we get a super great depiction of like what's going on internally with them. They are working right now to kind of slowly increase their grasp on the Imperial Courts. That seems to be like their thing. They've, over the last couple generations, I guess, they've kind of expanded the amount of power that they have in the Imperial Courts. And so they're working on that, but they're also kind of questioning whether that suits them and their role as a clan. Mm-hmm. If they're really able to like do what they need to do while they're so like exposed, I guess. So like forward.
Yeah.
Kachiko is still around. We talked a little bit about her before.
Yep.
She's still hot.
Yep.
But our very first look at her is when she's having that moment with Hotaru, which, like I said, it feels less gross. It also seems like more of the depictions that we get of her over time, they actually show her doing smart things. We still don't know entirely what her plan is, but we are still really early in these fictions. Not a lot story-wise has happened. Okay, like, a lot has happened, but, like, not a lot. You know what I mean?
Comparatively speaking, yeah.
Right. We'll get there. So, like, unlike previous fiction where it was a mile wide and an inch deep, the story's moving really slowly, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
So we don't entirely know what her plan is yet, but we do see her being quick and decisive in these really hard decisions. And, like, she's cunning and she has a plan. And those plans do not always involve taking off her clothes. And I'm just, like, really excited about that because this is finally the depiction of her that I wanted all along.
Yeah, no, very much agree. She's competent. And that's something that you didn't always see a lot of in the last fiction, in the AEG stuff. Mostly you just saw her being, you know, seductive-y and schemey, but you never actually saw her, like, actually saw her being competent. So that's a nice change.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about Shouju, or do you want me to talk about I feel like I've been doing all the talking here.
Shouju is great. He's very much the master of secrets. We get a lot less characterization of him. He's very withdrawn, I think, is how I would describe him. He's clearly scheming some stuff. You don't get a lot of him until the very end of the current arc of fictions that they're working on, right before some shit hits the fan.
I think even then, it's not... We still don't know what he's thinking. Like, we know that he knows things, but we still don't really know what he's thinking.
Yeah, you never really know what he's thinking, but you do get some really interesting conversations that he has with the Emperor. He's clearly got something up his sleeve with regards to the Emperor's big plan, but you don't know what he's thinking until it fucking goes sideways.
We'll get to in a minute.
Yeah, which is really interesting, though, and I liked. But yeah, the Scorpion Clan in general, I think Kachiko is much better. Shouju seems well depicted, but I wouldn't say we've seen enough of him to really judge. I haven't read the Scorpion novel either, though, so I can't speak to that.
Yeah, I haven't. I started novella. It. I haven't finished it. Yeah.
Are you ready unicorn. For the big change? The unicorn do stuff, like a lot of stuff.
Yeah, they're there from the beginning. They have more than one named character, which I thought was, like, super exciting, honestly.
Yeah.
They right now are doing their best to mix their cultural practices that they picked up while they're traveling outside Rokugan with those of Rokugan's really closed off, really imperialist, stick up their ass society.
Yep.
I want to point out that the first unicorn story was written by our fave, Reese Osby.
Yay. It's really great to see her back in. She took a long break from L5R and wasn't writing for years and years.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, so I mean, I think it is a pretty flavorful depiction and a unique look at the clan that I don't think we got a lot of in the other one. I think the unicorn was always like, oh, they're the nice clan for horse girls. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I've heard lots of takes from people that were like, oh, we need a clan for girls. Unicorns. You know what bitches love? It's unicorns. So it's exciting that they're not that this time, that there's a little bit more going on there.
Yeah.
Their champion has had to divorce her spouse so that she can marry a lion to prevent a war with the lion.
Yeah.
Because who aren't the lion at war with? He has similarly divorced his wife, who then goes to Unicorn Lands to commit suicide and stain the honor of the unicorn because she's so distraught over this, which was like a super novel concept, I think, in this setting, that like the idea of like divorce.
Yeah. That was a weird fiction for me.
It was kind of weird. I had to read it like four times to entirely understand what was going on. I don't think that it was necessarily like coherent or like well edited. I liked,
if it had been the third in a series, I think it would have been good, but it felt very in media res in a way that didn't work for me. But yeah. I liked the idea of the unicorn not knowing the political, like, matchmaking landscape well enough to realize they were getting hosed here, And then once they realize it, being just like, fuck it. Bring it, lion. We'll fucking stomp you. We got horses.
Yep. Yeah. I liked that. Like, they're shown as, like, this really kind of, like, independent. And, like, they're really proud of the fact that they're different. And I don't know. It was just a really cool.
Yeah.
I like the unicorn, again, much like the dragon. Just, like, not my favorite clan. They're just, they're not. Sorry, I was never a horse girl.
Sorry, Steph.
So, like, they just never really did much for me. And yeah. They're still not, like, top on my list, but they're definitely cooler now than they were.
Yeah.
They exist and do things.
I really like the way they refined the concept of the unicorn, which is that they're foreign elements fused with with Rokugani elements to give it strength. That their differences make them stronger, but they're still fundamentally Rokugani. I really like that. So
yeah.
You gonna let me do this part here?
Yeah, I was just gonna say, Jude. It's time for your bullshit.
Yeah. Okay. I'm on my bullshit now.
I'm gonna sit back and just let this happen.
The Imperials have maybe the most interesting change to me in the setting. Some of the other clans have gender flipped champions and people die a little early, but there is now a second Imperial prince in the Imperial family. Hantai Satori is still the elder prince and is just as much of a shit stain in this timeline as the other. But he now has a younger brother, Hantai Daisetsu. Now, if you are not widely familiar with the later arcs of L5R, you may not know why I would care about that. And let me tell you, friend, in AEG's L5R, there was also another Imperial Prince, but he never had a chance to be an Imperial Prince because his mother was kidnapped by Bloodspeakers, and that infant was chucked into Jugoku as an infant and emerged as the finest, flyest, and most badass motherfucker Rokugan ever did see, my main man Daigotsu. So, hilariously, in this one, none of that happened, and instead, he's the demonstrably superior Imperial Prince, which is really not that surprising, because one of the things that I've always loved about Daigotsu is that he's a better samurai than, like, 90% of the samurai in Rokugan. So it tracks to me that he would be the better Imperial Prince than Hantai Satori. But he's everything that Satori isn't. He's refined, restrained, cultured, polite, kind. He's great. He's fantastic. I fucking love him. He's pretty.
Oh, what a pretty boy. He's fantastic. And
but he's also a little nefarious. Like, not...
Yeah, I mean, not he's nefarious. Clearly like...
He's too smart for how old he's supposed to be. And in a way that is a little bit creepy.
Yes. Yeah. He knows too much.
Yeah. Like, this is a guy that...
And he knows too much.
Yeah. This is a character that, like, straight up, if he weren't who he is, you would just think, this is a smart-ass kid, like... You know, maybe too smart, kid. Maybe fucking chill out. But because he is who he is, that preternatural, like, competency reads as being a little bit malevolent.
Yeah.
I like it.
I know you do. I like it, too. It's very good.
It's very good.
When I was talking with Katrina, she was like, oh, do you have feelings about Daisetsu? And I was like, are we going to talk about this? And she was like, absolutely not. And I was like, damn it.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah. Oh, he's so good. Okay.
We'll talk about, we should just mention that there is another familiar character, a unicorn that is currently being held hostage in the Imperial capital, named Ayuchi Shihai, who you may also have heard of. Another future
I love her
Bloodspeaker, and I just it's just so good.
And she spends a lot of time hanging out with our friend Daisetsu, so...
Yeah, that's fine. We're not super hung up on the two of them and every fiction that they show up in together.
We're not, like, yeah, we're not, like, watching and waiting and following this very closely. And Katrina has not publicly called me out when...
Yeah, right?
Oh, I'm trying to remember which fiction it was, but there was one where they... Like, there was some shipping, and she, like, popped into a Discord and tagged me when it was posted.
Yeah, it was really good.
I
was
like, I appreciate that you know that I'm that kind of trash. Thank you. Thank you for recognizing that.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. They're so good. It's
fascinating. Do you want to move right to our shipping before we talk about...
The changes? Yeah,
probably. Like, the actual, like, meta stuff. Let's just... I mean, we're already on it. Let's just cut right to the bullshit. Titled the section shipping exclamation point. And then my first one is, someone make them kiss already. I can't take it.
Yeah. Daisetsu and Shihai, man, fuck. Okay, there's some age difference problems here. Shihai is older than Daisetsu. And like, Daisetsu's like 14. But
she's like, what, 17?
Something like that. Or like,
it's not 18. Like super much older.
But it's interesting, but there's no way to read the... So, to give context, because maybe not everybody is as done as much L5R bullshit as we have.
Daigotsu, certainly not this kind of bullshit.
Yeah. Daigotsu, which is Daisetsu's AEG alter ego, and Shihai are one of the great love stories of L5R. arguably the most? Probably. Come at me, bros.
I mean, I guess it depends on, yeah.
But they're great. They're a super great team. And it's hard to read the interactions of Daisetsu and Shihai as anything but courtship. I hesitate to use the word because it's a little bit strong of a word, but she feels borderline suicidal as a, what do you call it?
Hostage?
As a hostage in the Imperial City. Like, She's looking for ways to get in trouble and die in the Imperial City. And he's the only one that comforts her. And there's a point at which she basically says, like, knowing full well that it would be like treason for it to be the case, she would support him in lieu of his brother. And then she like...
Yeah, she basically says, like, I would kill him for you. I mean, she doesn't say it out loud, but like... Yeah. And then she has this moment of like... Oh my God, did I just have that thought? And I was like, yes, you did. And it was good.
Yeah.
It was Let that happen. So she's being held hostage in the Imperial City because she's supposed to be teaching the
forbidden magic of her people.
Yes, Mishoto. In this case. As far as we know so far.
Yeah.
So far it's just Mishoto, but you wait. We'll see. We'll see. So she's there not because she wants to be, but because she is forced to be there. The Imperials have decided that she's going to teach them the ways of Mishoto.
Yeah.
And she's stuck there, and she's absolutely miserable. She's distraught. The Imperial City is so far from what life is like in the Unicorn Clan. It's so foreign and... uptight, and like she's just miserable. And then they kind of start up this friendship, and they go for long walks in the garden and have conversations, and I'm waiting for them to kiss
or do blood magic.
Well, I mean, both, preferably both.
Yeah, I mean, whatever.
We've been watching it closely.
Yeah,
we'll keep you updated. We'll let you know.
We've already talked a little bit about Hotaru and Kachiko. I like the question
here. I also ship
here.
Them. I put them in here because I ship them.
Is it shipping if they're already kissing? I don't know. I'm not an expert in this stuff. I like that their relationship is way less gross than Hotaru and Kachiko's was, which was basically like competitive hate fucking. So this is way more pure and like wholesome.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. I like, and I just think that this shows like a positive level of character development and really just like story that we weren't necessarily getting in some of the previous stuff. Cause like we're getting a lot of story, but like these are more, better. They're more better. They're just better stories.
Yeah.
I mean, the character development here is just a lot more.
Yeah, agreed. There, I think the big thing I'm seeing, especially with regards to these character moments, is they're moving more carefully. They're moving slower, and they're giving the character moments a lot more time to breathe.
Yeah, I would agree.
Okay.
Let's talk about, I mean, we've talked about where things are different. I want to talk a little bit about why this matters.
Please do.
I mean, first of all, like I've already called out the fact that within the very first fiction, we have a woman as a clan champion who's like clearly a badass and decently competent. She's still, you know, kind of unsure, but like she shows up as this, like she's this cloaked figure who's just like walking among the soldiers in her army. And then all of a sudden, like rips off her cloak and stabs a dude. And it's so good. She's in this healthy, non-competitive relationship with her sister, and she's in love with another woman, but is also smart enough to not be tricked by her. It fixes things, and there's a lot of that in this story, even in places where they like subtly change things that really kind of fix a lot of the elements that were problematic. And so I like that they've done that for a variety of reasons, a lot of them personal. But yeah. I think that they really took those things seriously and said, like, okay, we like the story, we like the world, but what can we make better? Like, what can we do better this time? If we have this opportunity to start over, let's do better. And so I think that that's one of the big changes that they've made, and I do think that it really matters because pushing the story forward, it's just better. It just feels better.
Yeah, I think one thing doing this podcast has really made clear to me is how, I'm trying to find the right word, L5R story was very much a 90s story. A lot of the problems with it were because it was started in the mid-90s. And it gets, not a pass, but I think a lot of the problems with it, it gets away with a lot of those problems because of the built-in fan base and the nostalgia based around it. We've talked about this before. The reboot has been really deft about looking at what's good about L5R and what's valuable and what is central to what makes L5R good and worth keeping, and then fixing the parts of it that are not worth keeping and shitty and tweaking those, like the, you know, sexism and misogyny. And I really appreciate that they've been doing that really deftly, you know.
Yeah, I think that they didn't just take for granted that this has an established fan base and we can just keep producing more stuff and it will be fine. Because, I mean, I think that they're, like, they could have done that. It had this huge built-in fan base. And granted, there were a lot of people that were really upset about the sale. But I think that they very easily could have said, yep, we're just going to keep plugging along this path, and they still would have had decent sales. And so I appreciate the fact that they took the time to look at this and say, okay, if we're going to do this, let's do it right, I guess.
Not just right, but better.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. They could very easily, they could have just started the story over, or they could have just continued the story. They chose to restart the story and restart the story in a careful and better and thoughtful way. And when I use the word better, I want to be careful. I don't want people to think that I like the Fantasy Flight story better than the AEG version. I'm not trying to make, I think that the Fantasy Flight version makes a conscious effort to be more aware and to be better about certain things. And I think it's doing a lot of things better, but I don't necessarily think that there's anything wrong if you don't like the new Fantasy Flight story that it's telling.
Yeah, definitely, because it does make some significant changes, and I don't think that there's anything wrong with saying, you know, I'm not super interested in where this is going, or like the things that they've chosen to highlight or depict just aren't for me. I think it's more, I hesitate to like say inclusive because I think that that has connotations that are,
it's
like,
it's a loaded word, yeah.
Right, definitely. But I think this is designed for a broader audience, I guess. And it's designed for people like me who already really loved the game, but like wanted to feel comfortable loving it.
Yeah, I think what I was trying to separate out was the content of the story, and then the way it's told and the problems with it. Fantasy Flight, I'm not making a judgment on like the content of Fantasy Flight versus AEG. I'm commenting on the way in which it's being told and the shitty parts of the story. And I think Fantasy Flight has done a really good job of being smarter about how that story is being told, because they're starting from the very beginning with more careful planning and putting a lot more effort into building careful character moments and stuff like that. And also by, you know, telling I think inclusive is the right word. It's a loaded word, but I think that's really the only word for it. A more inclusive story, a story that is more welcoming and more interesting to more people.
Yeah, strong agree. It's designed for a different audience, and I think that's smart, because I think that there's a different audience playing this game. I think that the original iteration in the 90s was meant for dudes. One of the comments that I've heard a lot of times, like I said, about the Unicorn Clan was that it was very much like, oh, I guess we need a clan for women. And like, that feels bad, man. This was clearly done with the understanding that there are other people than just straight white dudes who play this game, and maybe they want the opportunity to see themselves in these characters, and like, that would be a cool thing to do.
Yeah, and I think that's what's that's one of the things that's really impressive to me about the new Fantasy Flight L5R, is they've taken what was really great about old AEG's L5R so far. I mean, it's only been a couple of years, but I've been impressed with the way that they've taken the old L5R and the things that we loved about it, and that they're carrying that forward into the new game.
Yeah, it still has the feel and the tone and the understanding of what Rokugan is. Like, the world still feels very much the same, and you still have a lot of the same characters and, like I said, a lot of the same traits. Yokuni feels the same. Suko feels pretty similar.
Yeah.
Like, Tuturi, still beige. But the changes that they have chosen to make have been meaningful, I guess. Like, they didn't change things just to say, hey, we're Fantasy Flight, we can do it different. They have been thoughtful and meaningful.
This is a really good way of putting it. Yeah.
I also want to talk about the fact that it does change the path that things are on.
Big time.
Here's the spoiler. The Emperor is already dead. It was not a scorpion who killed him. Which changes the entire plot as we know it.
Yeah, Satori got a sad over the fact that the Emperor was going to give the throne to Daisetsu and killed him. Oops. And now Kachiko has him in her pocket, because Kachiko cleaned up his mess, but without knowing that Shouju was the one that had sort of stage managed the abdication with the Emperor. So you have a super... I'm fascinated to see where it goes from here, because now you have scorpions on two sides of this weird arrangement. You had one scorpion that was trying to get Daisetsu onto the throne, and another scorpion that now has Satori in her pocket.
Because I think the understanding was that Shouju would act in the place of Daisetsu because he wasn't old enough yet,
He was going to be the Imperial Regent, yeah. And the only person who knows that Kachiko is full of shit is Tutori. And Shouju.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And this is the depiction of Kachiko that I really liked, is that she comes in and right away she's like, here's what we're going to do. Here's how we're going to stage everything. Like, here's what it needs to look like. Like, she's thinking things through, and it's like, okay, we need to do this, this, and this. And like, this plan sort of comes together. She kind of pulls all of the strings and sets up this scene to be what she wants it to be.
Yeah.
All without being super sexy.
Yeah.
And it was really good, because like I said, it had that sort of like underhanded, like, I'm being sneaky, I'm plotting. like, you can see that the wheels are turning there. And it was cool. It was cool.
Yeah. I'm really interested to see what comes next, because the very last part of that story is her learning that Shouju had other plans and her being like, well, fuck.
Yeah.
So I'm really curious to see what happens next.
Yeah, it's going to be good. Mm-hmm. Do we want to talk about like our final thoughts on this?
Yeah, I guess my final thought is, I think it was generally speaking, when they first bought the game, I was not excited for them to move it back to the Clan Wars, because I thought the Clan Wars were dumb, and I still generally agree with that statement.
I stand by that.
I stand by that, but I think moving it before the Clan Wars and just saying, fuck it, we're starting all over, has turned out to be really smart, because they can use familiar characters but do their entirely own thing, which I think is great. And I'm really excited to see what they do from here. I like that they're going slow and they're giving us really good character moments so that we really are invested in the characters. I just wish they gave us more, because I'm dying here. And I love the Daigotsu Daisetsu change. Somebody asked me, aren't you mad that it means you don't get Daigotsu? I said, no, I already had my Daigotsu, and now I get Daisetsu. I get two for the price of one. And God only knows what Daisetsu's got in his future. I don't know. But I'm super into Daisetsu and where he's going. So I'm really into it.
Yeah. For me, I think it's important to note that while there's some overlap here between the old stories and the new stories, and they're kind of playing in this same sandbox in some ways, the new lore is very different, and it's not a reboot in order to tell the same story in the exact same way, because we already have that story, like you said about Daigotsu too. Like, you have that. And I think it's important to treat these things as two different things. You know, I think that's a frustration that I've heard from some of the writers too, that it's, you know, they don't want people making those constant comparisons of old characters and new characters. And they're like, I want you to treat this as its own thing. And I think it's becoming increasingly clear that it is. It is hard to separate that from what we know, because it had so much lore and world building and nostalgia and investment in the old thing. So it is really hard to separate those two, but I think it is rapidly becoming clearer that this is its own thing. It's telling its own story, and it's really cool. I really like it. And I think that they've done a good job of keeping the things that make Rokugan Rokugan and changing the things that were bad or unnecessary, and making them better and more important too. So I really like the new stuff. It was so good to be reading it. I was trying to skim it because I've read a decent amount of it already, and I kept just like ending up reading all of it because it was really good and it's really compelling. And I just want to say that it feels really good to not be totally grossed out every time I read a story set in this dumb world. That was a new and exciting feeling, and I appreciated it.
Yeah, I hope that as we get further into the AEG stuff, there'll be less of that. I don't say it with any confidence, but I don't recall, when I started reading in Gold, I don't recall it being gross, but I also didn't recall that book being gross, so we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, and I feel bad, like, being on about that all the time, because I think, like, if you talk about it too much, people stop listening. Nobody wants to hear me be an angry feminist all the time, whether I feel that way or not. Like, that's, you know, that's a bummer. Especially when it's about something that you really love. I don't, like, none of us want to hear somebody say, this thing you really love fucking sucks. I don't want to hear me say that. I'd like to not be saying that anymore. So I'm really hoping that it gets better. And, you know, like I said, I don't want to be mad about it. I like this game. So it felt good to like this. I like where it's going. And I like that I still have this game and that I can keep playing it. And I'm really excited to play a sad crab game.
Same here.
All right. We'll be back next week with our review of a really bad book.
Should be fun.
No, it won't be. Garbage of the Five Rings is an independent production and can be found online at www.garbageofthefiverings.com and on Twitter at G5RPodcast. I'm one of your hosts, Amelia Antrim, and I can be found on Twitter at Ginger Reckoning. My co-host, Jude Vase, can be found on Twitter at Aramidic Jude. Sources for this episode and further information on the topics discussed can be found in the show notes. Thanks for letting us waste your time. We'll be back in 2 weeks.